Hello again, witches, seekers, and friends, and welcome to the Fat Feminist Witch podcast, the show where we do a little ranting, raving, and wand waving. I'm your host, Paige Vanderbeck, and together we're going to explore magic and spirituality, social justice, the psychic realm, and truly modern witchcraft. Hello again, my witchy friends, and thank you for tuning in to episode 101 of the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. Today's topic is Barbie. But of course, I am not just talking about one particular commercially manufactured doll. I'm going to talk about all sorts of doll and FOG magic, including how to use store-bought dolls in spells and rituals, and what these dolls mean to and about society. So today's episode was, of course, inspired by the Barbie movie starring Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie that came out last month. I have not seen a movie in theaters in years, since like well before the pandemic began. I used to do it all the time, but I just haven't in a really long time. When I saw how fun and colorful that Barbie would be, I decided I would go even if no one else wanted to go with me. And they didn't. I saw it by myself, but that's totally okay. You know, I used to go out and do things by myself all the time because I knew that if I waited around for someone else, I would miss out on a lot of stuff that I wanted to do. You know, everyone isn't going to want to do the same stuff I do. And I like my own company. I like all the same things I do. But when my social anxiety got bad a few years ago, I started staying home a lot more and only going out when I had someone there to lean on. So going to a movie alone at the mall on the bus, actually kind of a big deal for me. And I thought that Barbie would be the perfect movie to kind of force myself out a little bit. I didn't dress up like a doll or anything like that, but I did wear pink. I wore a pink shirt. I put on some makeup. And when I got to the theater, I saw tons of other people wearing pink too. Lots of grown-ups, even some dudes, like just everyone was wearing pink. When I was waiting for at the bus stop, a car with a couple of older ladies pulled up to a nearby red light and they honked and waved and they were wearing pink. They were clearly going to see it as well. When I left the theater afterward, everyone I saw was wearing pink. Everyone on the bus was wearing pink. So this was a little more than just a movie. You know what I mean? It was an event. So I didn't actually feel all that alone. I felt like, you know, all of us in the theater were there together and we were sharing this fun experience. And it reminded me a little bit of, I went to the Toronto International Film Fest about, oh geez, like 10 years ago now. And I was there by myself for the full, I think it was like 10 or 11 days. And I saw mainly the midnight movies because they were the most fun. I like seeing fun movies in theaters. And what I liked about it is that everyone there was there together and like sharing the experience. And every night I sat in the same general area in the theater. I got to know the other people that sat in the same area. And we interacted with the movie and with each other. And this felt a little bit like that. Now, I would have preferred just a little more hooting and hollering in the actual theater. The people here were a little bit more subdued than the Midnight Madness crowd at TIFF. and apparently, I am the only person who found Ken's obsession with horses just absolutely hilarious. Like, I was just losing my mind. But I still had a really good time, even though the crowd was a little bit subdued. So I'm going to give you a little synopsis for those who are curious or haven't seen it or whatever. So Barbie, Margot Robbie, she lives in Barbie Land with all the other Barbies and their friends and the Kens and also one Alan, who's Michael Cera. Excellent. And the whole place is run by the Barbies. They hold all the positions of power and they're pretty much always happy. They're always having a great day. The Kens don't really have any power, and they really only have a good day if Barbie pays attention to them, but they all have jobs and friends and hobbies and seem to have it pretty okay. Our main Ken, Ryan Gosling, famously says that his job is just beach. Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. How do I get this job? So, you know, everything's great in Barbie Land, but all of a sudden something happens to our main Barbie. She starts getting really sad. She starts thinking about death, which is unusual for a doll. And then her feet go flat. Barbies are stuck with those high heel feet, right? So life isn't perfect anymore. There's a big problem here. She needs help. And so she has to go see someone they call Weird Barbie, who's played by Kate McKinnon from SNL, Saturday Night Live. And Weird Barbie is the coolest. The way she's described is she is a Barbie doll that looked like everyone else, but then she got played with too hard. So her hair is cut and it sticks out and she's got a marker all over her face. She's always doing the splits, which is my favorite. And her clothes are really wacky. They don't fit right. They don't match. She's perfect. She's fabulous. Whomst among us has not played with a Barbie just a little bit too hard and ended up with Weird Barbie? I know I had at least one, and she was my favorite doll. That's how she ended up so weird. So Weird Barbie explains that the way things work, all of the dolls in Barbie Land are being played with in the real world. So there's this connection between the Barbies and the kids that are playing with them, but most Barbies just aren't aware of it, you know, unless they get played with too hard. And that's how it works. So someone who is playing with our main Barbie is sad and is in trouble. So Barbie has to go to the real world, find the little girl who's playing with her, and help her to be happy again so that everything can be okay. So that's what she does. She agrees to let Ken tag along, but the real world is absolutely not what Barbie expected. All the Barbies believe that their creation, the creation of the doll in the real world, fixed all of the problems of sexism. They cured sexism, and that the balance of power in our world looks the same as it does in theirs. You know, there's a female president and the Supreme Court is all women and you know, women run everything. And she learns that that isn't the way things work. Ken also learns that that is not the way things work. So while Barbie's having her adventure, Ken learns about the patriarchy and he decides that it sounds fabulous. Sounds fabulous, right? And how could he not? Him and Barbie get split up. So Ken heads back to Barbie Land with a whole bunch of books about the patriarchy while Barbie continues on her journey. She goes to Mattel for help. They all know that Mattel is the company that makes Barbie. It's so funny. But she goes to Mattel for help, and there she finds a boardroom full of men. There's no women that work there in the boardroom. There's no one on the board. There's no woman CEO. Will Ferrell is the CEO, and he says, "We have totally had women CEOs," and it's like they've had two in their entire history. But while she's there, she also finds the sad girl who has been playing with her. So Barbie's idea is to take this girl back to Barbie Land and make her happy again, and everything's going to get fixed. But when they get there, they see that it has been taken over by the Kens. And their idea of patriarchy involves a lot of horse imagery that really made me laugh. Like, it's a little bit cowboy-esque, but it's just horses absolutely everywhere. He's wearing this, like, big, fluffy, white, like, fur coat at one point. And when you look at the lining on the inside, it's, like, all horses. I don't know why that makes me laugh so hard, but it really made me laugh. And the Barbies that are there have, you know, they've been kind of subjugated by it. They're all mindless. They gave up all of their power to the Kens because they had no idea what patriarchy was. They'd never been exposed to it, and it just kind of happened that way. One Barbie also said, "It's kind of nice. I don't have to think. I don't have to try really hard. I can just, you know, just exist for a little while," which I think is something I definitely understand, even though it's not the way I want things to be all the time, right? So it's not just a funny thing. Hilarity ensues, of course, and there's hijinks, but it's not just funny. This is also a very real statement. You know, it's a very real thing about what it's like to be a woman or someone that doesn't fit in with the patriarchy, that isn't supported by it in the real world. The challenges that we face, how a lot of men and those held up by the patriarchy treat women and girls and the people who are marginalized. You know, it talks about how we still have to fight all of the time, even with the inspiration that we get from symbols like Barbie. Barbie isn't useless. She's a symbol, but she's just one. And she can only do so much, you know? And every adult woman that I could see in that theater had wet eyes. during this like incredible part where they really lay it all out. Really good. I'm not going to tell you the end, of course, because it's wild and I don't want to spoil it. And I think you guys should see it because it was beautiful and it was funny and it was really, really fun. Even if you've never been someone who plays with Barbies or with dolls, I think you could like it. If as long as you like comedy, you like awesome sets and costumes, you like actors who do a really great job. There's a really hilarious, like, I guess you'd call it a fight scene. It's just great. There was just so much happening and everything made me laugh or feel something, like absolutely everything. So I'm really glad that I went to see it in the theater, you know, in my pink shirt. And I really do think it was kind of the perfect movie for me to use to reclaim a little piece of my independence. I think Barbie would be proud. I was a kid who played with Barbies and other similar dolls. We didn't have a lot of money, so they weren't all Barbie brand Barbies. But they were all, you know, a similar size and shape. I love to dress them up. I love to, like, make clothes either out of, you know, little fabrics that I could glue together because I wasn't a big sewer. Or with paint because I certainly made a weird Barbie. I made up storylines and, you know, characters. And they weren't all named Barbie. You know what I mean? They were all different. I also had Sailor Moon dolls that were kind of the same size and shape. And most of what I have left, I actually went and I kind of dug out my box of old toys. Most of what I have left are the Sailor Moon dolls, which made me laugh. They don't really, you know, they don't look like Barbie. But they are super cool. One of them has all of the parts of her uniform and the box, although the box is in bad shape. I was like, oh, this is so cool. It's probably not worth anything, but I love it. So, I used to make my dolls go on jungle excursions and my mom's houseplants. And she'd put them all on the porch when it got warm. They'd go spelunking in mud puddles. I had a gymnast Barbie. She was my favorite. She was the one that ended up weird. She came on monkey bars with me. One Christmas, I got this little pink, like, ballerina outfit, like, with the little sticking out tutu and everything. And it came with a matching one for Barbie. And I swear I wore that for, like, a whole year. I would just put pants or bike shorts on underneath because I'm an absolute disaster. Like, fashion is not my forte, right? I was a kind of lonely kid. I had a little brother and he was the best. He was my best friend in the whole world. But I was really starved for attention from grown-up women. So I played pretty exclusively with dolls like Barbie that were older. You know, they were teenagers or adults or whatever. They were older people. They were not babies. No babies. Barbie wasn't my baby. That wasn't my style. Barbie was, you know, she was all of my own dreams for my future. She represented my life in the future that I wanted. She allowed me to dream about the world and who I would be and the kinds of relationships that I would have. And being a mom, I knew that wasn't something I was super interested in. So, you know, baby dolls, they just weren't really my thing. And I felt really, really seen when, like, right at the beginning of the Barbie movie, the narrator talks about the creation of Barbie doll, right? And what it meant to little girls when it came out. So, you know, the legend in the movie is that before Barbies, all of the dolls were baby dolls. And all the little girls could dream of when they grew up was being a mom. And then Barbie came along and they got to dream of whatever, you know, of being, maybe they just wanted to be a hot leggy babe or an astronaut or an executive or a singer or a gymnast or, you know, whatever it is that they wanted to be. And that's why all the Barbies in Barbie Land thought that their creation had, like, freed girls in the world from having a single destiny that was decided by someone else. It's not that, you know, they had freed girls from the shackles of motherhood. It's just, they got a choice now. Of course, Barbie is not perfect. Barbie's not perfect. She didn't completely eliminate the patriarchy, first of all. But a major criticism of Barbie dolls and the whole Barbie brand is the unrealistic kind of overtly sexual body type. You know, she's got a really skinny waist, she's got round hips, she's got big boobs, and then these feet that are permanently arched for high heels. And a lot of people still don't let their kids, especially not their daughters, play with Barbie dolls because they believe, you know, that it makes kids feel bad about themselves and that their body, it sets an unrealistic beauty standard. You know, you can't look like Barbie. And that's totally okay if you think that and if that's why you don't like Barbie. But I want you to remember that those standards, they don't come from the doll. They didn't start there, you know. Barbie is a reflection of a larger problem in society. It's an obsession with thinness, with whiteness, because although there are black Barbie dolls, the first Barbie was not a black Barbie doll. And also with what men consider to be sexually desirable. That is a big problem, but Barbie is just a doll. Barbie isn't the problem. She reflects the fact that the problem has been there for a really long time. Barbie's a chunk of plastic. She is not a reflection of what real women look like. Not any more than, like, you know, whatever. Bugs Bunny in a dress or Betty Boop, you know, both of whom I also loved as kids. And I don't remember having a discussion with my mom about it or anything, but I knew as a kid that they weren't real. Their features were exaggerated. They were a caricature. They were a product of someone's imagination. I wasn't supposed to look like Barbie. I wasn't supposed to be that shape because she's not a real person. So the doll didn't make me question whether or not my body was a problem. But models in magazines and on runways, watching whole movies and TV shows with zero fat people in them, which is like bizarre when you think about it, like when you compare just walking down the street on an average day and the image in a movie of someone walking down the street, there aren't even fat extras in the background. It's nuts. There was also, you know, a lack of plus size clothes, an obsession with weight loss. I was bullied because I was fat as a kid. All of that stuff made me feel kind of bad about myself and made me think my body was a problem. But not Barbie, because Barbie wasn't a woman. Barbie was an idea. She was fluid. You know, she was whatever I wanted her to be, whatever I said that she was. I think I would have liked to have a doll that's shaped a little bit more like I am, but I don't know if it would have been helpful if our entire culture was still the same. You know what I mean? I bet that if there was one single plus-size Barbie with her own special and very limited amount of clothing that didn't fit any other doll and didn't look like what other dolls wore, you know, all of the clothes would be specific, I don't think I would have liked that. I think that would have been a little too real for me. But that's exactly what would have happened, you know, unless we lived in a totally different world. Like, if I had to shop in the Barbie plus size section and the real life plus size section, I think that would have been very depressing for me, because that's something that really depressed me. I was a fashion disaster, but I also was sad that I couldn't get more clothes and more, you know, outfits, because I really wanted to express myself that way. The 90s were brutal for plus size clothes as well. I mean, the clothes were, they were just such a, like, a human rights violation. I was dressing so much older than I was, you know, from the time I was a tiny child. And now it's like I have to dress like a teenager. Like, there's no winning. There's no winning with plus size clothes. But anyway, I am glad that there are a lot more options for Barbies now. There's more sizes, there's more styles, there's different bodies, there's Barbies with different disabilities and mobility aids and stuff like that. And I think that is so awesome. And I am also okay with my own history of using the kind of standard shaped Barbie doll as a stand-in for just being a grown-up. She was just a grown-up. I think both things are true at the same time. When it comes to witchcraft, that is what dolls are. They are a stand-in for a real person. They're created to look like or to represent a real person so that whatever magic is done on the doll is also done on the person in question. This is called sympathetic magic, and the dolls can be called poppets, fetishes, not the kind you're thinking of, effigies, or in movies, you know, they're voodoo dolls. Dolls can also be used to represent deities, and sewing or carving or making a representation of your patron deity can be a devotional act, and then the doll can be placed on your altar, much like a statue would be, you know? So why dolls specifically? In Denise Alvarado's 2014 book, The Voodoo Doll Spellbook, which I do recommend, by the way, it's very interesting, very cool. The foreword is written by Dorothy Morrison, and she lays out beautifully why dolls right in this foreword. So I'm just going to quote her on this. To start with, doll magic has a head start over other types. Why? Because the doll, in and of itself, regardless of shape or form, holds a magic all its own. It's a silent, timeless, irresistible force to which no one, not toddler, nor teen, nor even adult, is immune. It tugs at our emotions and urges us to care for the doll, to dress it, and occasionally even confide in it. And since that sort of emotional response is the driving force behind all magic, it's little wonder that conjure folk find the doll to be such an indispensable basis for their workings. And I genuinely could not have said it any better. I tried to compose a sentence or a little paragraph that was just like that, and I couldn't. So I had the book open and I was reading it, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to quote her because that's perfect. There is something about dolls that is so primal for us. You know, I think it's maybe the humanness. Lots of people are actually, they're very afraid of or freaked out by dolls, or anything that has a human-like appearance but isn't alive. Automatonophobia is the broader word for that, and then for dolls specifically, it's pediophobia. And it can mean, you know, any kind of doll, from ventriloquist dummies, who I think are like right up at the top of that list. and for me especially, it's those baby dolls with eyes that close when you lay them down. That is the one type of doll that has always seemed kind of creepy to me. It can also be robots and animatronics, you know, and even Barbies. Some people fear figures like theme park animals or even teddy bears, but for most people with these particular phobias, it is specifically their human-like appearance that elicits the strong reaction. One of the most common complaints from these people, one of the areas of the doll that freaks them out the most, is the eyes. The eyes of dolls, especially like very fancy or expensive dolls, can look pretty real. But they're not real. When we look into a real person's eyes, a living person, we don't just see the physical parts. You know, you're not just looking at an iris and an eyeball and whatever. There is something in the eye that appears alive to us, and it forms a connection between the two people. And that's why they say eyes are the window to the soul. When you look into someone's eyes, you see something there, some vision of their person, their humanity. So if you're looking into eyes that appear human, but have no life behind them and therefore appear dead, I mean, that's creepy. That's that's very creepy. I understand that fear and that unease. I don't have a specific fear of dolls, but I totally get it. Totally get it. When I was a kid, I had a friend who collected these very specific clown dolls that were all the rage in the 80s and the early 90s. Those of you from this time will absolutely know what I mean. So they looked like little French clowns, right? They had porcelain faces. They had this super soft, I mean, it was the softest thing in the whole world, this very colorful hair. And then like little silk costume, like Pierrot style. And then their bodies were filled with sand. And they came in all sizes, from like pocket size to nearly life size. You can still find them lurking on thrift store shelves all over the place. I see them all the time, and they make me laugh a little bit. But anyways, this friend, she collected them, and she had hundreds. And because they had these delicate porcelain faces and these kind of heavy little bodies, They were a little bit easy to break. What a weird design choice. Like, I don't get it. But anyways, her parents, they built a shelf. They put up a really high shelf, and it was, you know, a few feet from the ceiling, but high enough that she couldn't pull stuff down. And there was a shelf that went all the way around all four walls of her room. So it was just this little ledge all the way around. And that is where most of the clowns were. She had a few that, you know, she was allowed to play with and whatever. But then all of the fancy stuff, the really big ones, the really expensive ones, the limited edition type stuff, those were all up on this shelf. No big deal in the light of day. I have zero fear of clowns. No fear of dolls unless their eyes open and close, which freaks me out. But despite all that, waking up in the middle of the night with like 500 tiny little clowns staring at me was so jarring. This is such an early memory for me. This is like I had to have been 6 years old. And I can still absolutely picture all of these little clowns just watching me. And I slept over there kind of a lot, you know, she was my best friend. And I would sleep like with my teddy bear over my eyes, just in case I woke up on my back and, you know, was staring up into these dead little clown eyes. It's so funny to think of now. It's one of those memories that really makes me laugh. But the thing is, feeling watched by something that's not supposed to be able to like look at you is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable. So it comes as no surprise then that what encourages this fear a lot of times is just an uncomfortable or a scary experience as a kid, whether that's, you know, watching Chucky or waking up in a room full of clown dolls watching you. And kids from cultures where dolls can be used in magic to curse others, to cause pain or to get retribution, no matter how righteous or deserved, those kids are a little bit more likely to be afraid of dolls because dolls have a very, you know, a very real kind of scary meaning. So just a fun little tidbit about dolls. I'm assuming that no one who clicked on this episode, because it's very clearly about dolls, has this fear. But just in case you do, I get it, man. I get it. So whether you're afraid of or enchanted by dolls, either one's fine. There's no denying they really get us up all up in our feelings, right? And feeling is what drives magic. That's what fuels our spells, is our emotions. And I mean, just look at the response to the Barbie movie. There's tons of emotion there. It has everyone, even like big, strong, manly men. Like I saw a guy with like a full beard and like he was wearing a pink t-shirt with his leather biker vest on top as he's like holding his lady's hand and they're going into the theater. Just a beautiful image that I will remember for the rest of my life. You see all these people wearing pink, you know, and the men are all like, I am Kenuff, which is fabulous. I love this. It's such a big deal. And the movie, I mean, it just made $1 billion. No movie directed by a single woman has ever done that. So it is full-on cultural sensation. Like, it's bona fide. Barbie's emotional hold on the world, even before the movie, gives Barbie power. And that is power that you can certainly use in your magic. And I'm going to tell you how to use plastic dolls like Barbie's as a poppet or as a voodoo doll. But first let's kind of go over the basics of a kind of classic DIY magical doll. I am quite sure that it will come as no surprise to all of you, my wonderful and very culturally inclusive audience, that the Hollywood image of a voodoo doll stuck with pins is not the be-all end-all of working magic with dolls. I'm sure you guessed that. Nor is cursing or baneful magic. Though dolls can be used for just about any magical purpose, so that's not a complete myth. You know, that's, I think what it is just another cultural image that arose from slavery in the attempt to demonize African people and their traditional religions. This is just another thing within our culture that we maybe don't realize only exists because of racism. This might also be another thing that you can blame on White Zombie with Bela Lugosi. Just like zombies. Just like in my zombie episode. Yeah, this might be another one of those. But in truth, magical dolls have been a part of many ancient religions, both within and outside of Africa. Ancient Greeks used little dolls called kolossoi to trap malevolent beings or deities. So they were a tool of protection. So there's lots of history there outside of voodoo and hoodoo, but that is still where you're going to find some of the best information for how to make these dolls, how to decorate these dolls, and where they come from. So let's have a little bit of fun. Let's make a magical doll. The actual body of your doll can be made from cloth, wax, clay, wood, or even paper. It depends on what material is most comfortable for you to work with, how you want the doll to function, and how long you want it to last. For a temporary situation, you probably don't want to spend weeks carving some exquisite wooden marionette, you know, like Pinocchio. And for something long-term, a doll made of like paper and school glue probably won't cut it. Likewise, some dolls are meant to look like a magical object, but other dolls are not. So you can make a doll that has, you know, secret magical material inside, something like a teddy bear that you fill with herbs for protection and give to your kid. For an all-purpose doll, fabric like felt, very cheap and easy to get, and a needle and thread is totally sufficient. But fabric that's been worn by the person the doll is meant to represent is really the best that you can do. So if you have an old t-shirt or a sock or a scarf, even something that they've worn next to their body, that really is the best material that you can make your doll out of. When it comes to the design, this can again be super detailed, be an undeniable likeness of the person, or it can be shaped like a gingerbread man, which is usually how my dolls end up looking. And in that case, you'll use other means to tie that doll to the person that isn't so focused on likeness. But in this case, you want to consider again the impact that you want the doll to have. For example, if this is going to be a doll that someone sees, especially if it's the person it's targeting, and especially if it's supposed to scare them, a doll with a very serious and detailed likeness of them probably going to be pretty scary no matter who it is. I know I would be rethinking every choice I've ever made in my life. So consider that when you are designing your magical doll. You are going to add magical herbs and things like that to the inside of the doll, but most of the stuffing will be just that. It'll be stuffing to give the doll some shape. In the Voodoo Doll Spellbook, Denise Alvarado says that Spanish moss is a perfect multi-purpose magical stuffing for poppets. I've used mullein as it's very fluffy and soft, and mullein grows wild where I'm at while Spanish moss does not. So that's another thing to consider. You can also use cotton, rice, straw, sand, like those little clown dolls, or beans. You can make a little voodoo doll beanie baby. Why not? You can use those for stuffing as well. Everything inside the doll does not have to be magical in nature. You can use small pinches of your herbs and things. You can use little crystal chips instead of full pieces, you know, something that's a little bit bigger or heavier or very expensive. That might not be your best thing to stick inside of a doll. Magical dirt or powders, coins or money, keys, good luck charms, all that kind of stuff can also be added as long as they're the right size to fit in. Symbols and sigils can be added to the doll either by including them in the design, like, you know, drawing or embroidering them on the fabric. Or they can be drawn on a piece of paper and stuffed inside with your other ingredients. Then you have something called tag locks, which is something personal that ties it to the person the doll represents. This can be something that comes from their body, so a lock of hair, fingernail clippings, that kind of thing. It can also be like a spritz of their perfume or a piece of their jewelry. The perfume, make sure it's very specific. They gotta wear that every day. You can use a strip of paper that has their signature on it, or fabric that they've... If you don't have enough of the fabric to make a whole doll of, you know, you might not have a whole t-shirt or something. or you might not be able to use the whole thing, you can take off a little piece of that and put that inside. You want something that hasn't been laundered, so don't pull it out of the clean laundry basket. You want it to be, you know, a little dirty. Make sure it has some sweat or, you know, DNA material on there. If you're making a doll related to love or sex, something with sexual fluid on it is, you know, the gold standard there. This is, by the way, the reason that some people do not leave stuff like this behind anywhere. Like some folks sweep up their hair at the salon and take it home with them to dispose of it themselves. You know, they keep a little bag in their purse. Some folks definitely take condoms or towels with them when they leave for the same reason. It's actually very smart. You never ever know what someone has up their sleeve, right? You can also use a photo if you don't want to get quite so graphic. You can also use a photo. You can stick it inside the doll or you can pin it to the outside of it, depending on, again, the impact you want your doll to have. So those are the materials for the doll itself. But you'll also be consecrating your doll, so you'll want to have something like candles, incense, or magical oils on hand for that purpose. Every time I've made a poppet, I've used fabric because I like hand sewing. I find it to be a good repetitive motion that helps me focus my energy and pour it into an object. Plus, I like the look of a kind of, you know, rough, rustic looking gingerbread shaped doll. Like, I like that vibe. So that is what I'm going to describe making today. I want to make a doll that can help someone in my life be a little bit more sympathetic to my recent mental health issues. They really aren't using their empathy muscles, if I say so myself, and are pretty dismissive and shitty. Let's just be honest there. They've been shitty. So a good color to help someone open up their heart and treat you and speak to you with more kindness is pink. Yeah, Barbie pink. So I have some pink felt. I want our lines of communication to be clear, so I'm going to put my doll together with white thread, which is very pure and clear and positive. For herbs, I've got some sweet pea flowers, you know, for sweetness, some white willow bark for strengthening love, and comfrey leaf that I harvested from our garden. Comfrey is good for quite a few things, including healing. And in this case, I also want its association with a happy home. I want to heal our relationship, strengthen our bond, and have us communicate without bitterness or anger so that we can live more harmoniously. For crystals, I'm using rose quartz to open up the heart and keep that pink vibe going, but also a little piece of obsidian. It's a little bit jagged because I'm fucking pissed. And, you know, I want this to be serious. You know, this is a very serious concern that I have, and I want that energy to come through the doll. Also, obsidian absorbs negativity, so hopefully, you know, maybe it'll suck all that negative energy out of the heart. But if not, obsidian has been used to carve weapons for centuries for a reason. It is a very good crystal for protection, for binding, for anything like that. I've got a little bit of hair as a tag lock, and also some paper and a pen so I can write this particular phrase that they've been repeating. Super hurtful and petty, and I really don't want to hear it anymore, so I'm going to write it on the paper, cross it out, and put that inside the doll to hopefully encourage them to stop saying it. I am also going to make another companion doll. I'm not going to list every single thing again, but I want to make one that is representing me. It's a corresponding doll. They match. And this doll is going to be for protection against this person's, you know, behavior. So my doll is going to be red with white thread, because I also want to communicate clearly when I'm upset, and include some of the same elements like the obsidian for the protection and the comfrey for a harmonious home. We're pretty close, not just in proximity, we're related. We had a close relationship. So I want to make the dolls at the same time and in the same shape, because this issue is really tearing us apart and I don't want that. For plain stuffing, I have cotton balls that I've pulled apart, so it's just fluff. And to consecrate them, I'm using patchouli incense because we both love it and we wear patchouli as perfume, so it's something that we share. So I've cut my little gingerbread sisters out of felt and sewn all around the seams, but left an opening where I can add in the stuffing and the filling. You can leave any spot on the doll open for this, but I like to pick a spot that matches my intention. So I've left the left side of the chest, near where the heart is, open. I'm also going to put all of my magical ingredients in the chest area of the doll for the same reason. If this was a doll specifically for communication, I might fill up the head. If it was a banishing doll, I'd put magic items in the feet and the legs, and you know, so on. So I stuff all the extremities with cotton, leave a little cavity in the chest. As I place each of my magical items into the doll, I'll say out loud what it is that I want this ingredient to contribute to my spell. Save the tag log for last, and when I put that in there, I will say the person's name out loud, again to tie it to them. Here's where I light my patchouli incense cone, and when it gets going real nice and the smoke is coming out, I'm going to waft the smoke around my dolls to connect them together. I considered using a piece of string or a ribbon or something to tie the dolls' hands together, kind of like they're holding hands, right? To symbolize that connection. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought that seemed a little extreme. You know, I don't want us to feel stuck together. I want us to feel connected. I want us to choose to keep each other close if that's what works for us, if that's what we want. So instead of tying them together, I'm going to build them at the same time and waft them through this smoke, the patchouli smoke that is something that we share, to symbolize that connection. Now, before sewing up the doll, after I fill it with everything, I breathe into it 3 times. The person who taught me how to make poppets, and also charm bags actually, said that this was in essence like breathing life into the doll, and it also put something of myself into it, but it's something that can't be used against me if the doll falls into the wrong hands. So I'm not putting in my hair, which someone could take out and use to make their own doll, right? Super smart. So once everything is sewn up, my spell is cast and the energy is out there. But for my purposes, the specific spell, this is an ongoing situation. And I want to keep the spell up. I want to keep it going. So every week, I'm going to light my patchouli incense and pass my little dolls through the smoke to reinvigorate it and also strengthen that connection between them. Now, if I wasn't in a forgiving mood and I wanted to curse this bitch into next Tuesday, I'd make a doll with black fabric. I'd fill it with something rotten and smelly. I'd leave out the rose quartz. And I would put it somewhere she would be near but not see it, you know, like inside their car or something like that. So, you know, it's a slightly different situation depending on the intention behind your spell. I want to take a quick break and give a special shout out to the wonderful witches that support the show through Patreon.com. Even when I had advertisers or sold products or anything like that, the show's main source of revenue has always come from these generous and incredibly supportive people. Sometimes I feel like I'm not doing enough to show my appreciation or to make their investment, you know, worth the money. And they never let me get away with that. They never let me get away with it. They always tell me when they feel like I'm doing a good job and that it's okay to need time off. They give me feedback on the episodes. They join me when I'm able to go live. And they just always reassure me that they are happy to be a part of the show in whatever way that I need and that they can, you know, provide. So from now on, I'm going to take a minute during every episode to thank them all by name. Just kidding. I am very lucky to have too many names on that list, so I will be picking 3 different patrons each time just so they know that I am thinking of them and that they mean a lot to me. So today I want to thank Ember R, that's Ember with an E, Ember R, Emily M, and Christina Z for their support and for listening to and loving the Fat Feminist Witch podcast. I could not have done it without you. When you make your poppet or your doll out of fabric, clay, wax, what have you, you have full control over the size and the shape and the internal makeup of the doll, you know, what it's stuffed with. Your entire poppet can be filled with herbs and crystals and magical items. You don't need extra stuffing, right? You can fill it up to the brim. You can do whatever you want. But when you use a pre-made doll, this is not the case. In fact, with these dolls, like a Barbie, there's really only one place that you can fill up, and that is the head. If you remove the head from the body and look inside, you'll see that the only thing in there is some glue and some hair. You know, that's how her hair is attached. But you still have open space in there. That is the only open space inside your doll. So this is where you're going to put small amounts of your chosen magical herbs, small little crystal chips. You can crush them down even if you have a mortar and pestle. You can also use that mortar and pestle to grind it all into a powder, which would be a little bit easier, especially if you have very chunky herbs like flower stems or roots or something like that. So the trick is to get that stuff in there and make sure you have enough space that you can reattach it. There's usually a ball joint at the top of the neck. Then comes customizing your doll and making it match whoever it is the doll is supposed to represent. And there are various levels from beginner to expert when it comes to customizing these plastic dolls. But we're gonna start with the most simple stuff. So just like with any other poppet, you want to consider the different magical elements that you can control, like colors and symbols, motifs, stuff like that, scent or oils, general shape, and accessories. Let's say you want to make a poppet for a love spell. You can find a doll with red or pink hair if you want, or it can have the same color hair as the person that you want to attract. Maybe you really like people with red hair or with black hair or what have you. And then you can get clothing and accessories in these magical colors. So they can be red or they can be pink. They can feature symbols like hearts. You can dress them up to look like you if you're trying to use the doll to represent yourself, but try to make up an outfit that you would wear for a romantic date. Or, I mean, you could even be really specific. If you are looking for someone that wants to get married and do all of that, you can get wedding dresses for a lot of these dolls. Grab accessories like a wedding ring or a bouquet of flowers, you know? Or if you want your spell to focus on self-love, a little mirror that you can put in her hand. It would be very cool. If you want someone who wants kids or pets, grab some of those for your doll to hold on to or to, you know, put in a little display with your doll. There are lots of dolls of different body types and shapes and things these days. So search around for a doll that matches you, that looks like you as best as you can. Sometimes you don't have a lot of options, but there are more than there used to be. So, you know, there are dolls that are taller or shorter, you know, they have larger bodies or smaller bodies. Some come with disability aids like crutches or a wheelchair. And you can find some of that stuff at thrift shops even. There are big grab bags of like random doll accessories that are usually fairly cheap. So if you do get thrift stuff or something from like a big box store, you're going to want to cleanse the energy of all of those items by passing them through some incense smoke, like I did earlier to consecrate the fabric doll. So use a cleansing smoke like a sage or lavender or something like that. You can also spritz it with Florida water. You can absolutely wash them if they really need to be washed. Please wash them. But you can also add some salt to the water that you use to do double duty and also cleanse the energy of them. Before you dress up your doll, you can use marker or watercolor pencil or paint or something to draw sigils and symbols on the actual body in corresponding places, like chakra locations. Or, you know, for a love doll, you could draw a sigil that you create. You know, come up with an invocation or spell words if you like, or with music. Do the same thing when you place your ingredients in there. Say out loud what it is you want each of them to do. If you're going with the wedding dress vibe, maybe put on your ideal wedding song while you put it all together. I would still breathe onto the doll like I did with my fabric one, and pass it with an incense through an incense smoke to consecrate it. If you're going with your love doll, you know, it can be something that either you specifically love, something that is the scent of love to you, or it can be something like rose incense. Keep that doll on your altar and decide how you are going to continuously feed it, you know, keep the energy up to keep the spell working. I think removing the head every week or at a regular interval might be a bit much, and I think it could weaken the plastic over time. You could also just pull it the wrong way and rip it. So I would not open it up all of the time. Paying attention to it, holding it, touching it, speaking to it, anointing it with oil or smoke, again, all of this is perfectly acceptable. Something I loved doing as a kid was brushing the doll's hair, like just running one of those little Barbie brushes through it. There's just, there's something about the motion and the sound that I found, you know, it's a relaxing repetitive motion, and the sound is also relaxing. It's like a trance almost. This is why there's so many like hair brushing ASMR videos on YouTube. So you could certainly pick up your love doll on a Friday, which is the sacred day to Venus, brush its hair, and meditate on the kind of love that you'd like to attract to you. Now, once your spell comes true, you can absolutely put the doll up on the shelf, keep it as a memento or positive talisman of your relationship. If it doesn't work or if it's not something you want to keep, I would take it apart and cleanse it. You can either reuse the doll if you like, or you can get rid of it. If the spell is for something, maybe that's not so nice. Maybe it's baneful magic or a curse or a banishing or something, totally fine. This is a doll that I personally would dispose of after. You can take it apart and wash it, get rid of the clothes separately if you're worried about someone finding it, if you don't want it to be obviously, you know, like a big voodoo doll sitting in the garbage. So take it apart, wash it, essentially dismantle your spell, and throw the doll out. Don't do this with new dolls all the time. You don't want to fill the landfill with a whole bunch of plastic. So be mindful about that when you decide if you're, you know, your puppetry, if you decide if you want your puppetry to be something where you use these plastic dolls or something where you make like a fabric doll that can fall apart. Make sure you're picking the right ingredients for your spell and for your intention. And that's true of all spells, not just ones with dolls. So those are the basics of working with these plastic dolls, but they are actually very customizable. If you have the knowledge and the tools, the materials, you can find professional doll makers or customizers online that remove the factory paint and draw on their own face. They reroot the hair and change it, put on different, completely different hair, or use sculpting clay to change their body shape entirely. They design and sew clothes from scratch. They create custom jewelry, shoes, all sorts of other accessories. Now there's lots of people online that do this, but I found a witch on YouTube who's based in New Zealand and customizes dolls specifically for magical purposes. So their channel is called Of Crafts and Curios. I'll link to it in the description as always. And what I liked about this channel is that this witch shows you how to use sympathetic magic to make a doll for a particular person, but also has a whole series of dolls they made for like sabbats along the wheel of the year and deities and stuff. So making the doll is a ritualistic and devotional activity for them. And of course they look beautiful on her altar later. You know, she shows you what it looks like in a whole little display. Maybe plastic and rubber are not the kinds of ingredients a lot of people think of as being the best for witchcraft. You know, a lot of people like to stick to purely natural ingredients, and that is totally okay. But if you have a history with these dolls, if they mean something to you, if you have a strong emotional connection to them, that is enough. That is what matters. And that makes them a powerful tool for magic. Dolls like Barbies, you know, these are not just ingredients in a spell for some people. you don't have to customize your doll even, you know. You can use these dolls in your magical decor on your altar. They can be used to represent deities or pay homage to ancestors or just bring certain energy to your magical space. I have actually seen lately some really cool kind of vintage Barbies that are made by Mattel that I would put on my altar. And I've been seeing them a lot because the Barbie movie is out. So people in groups I'm in on Facebook that are like weird and wonderful secondhand finds and, you know, maximalist art. highly recommend, by the way. They have been finding really cool vintage or older Barbie dolls and showing them. And I have found, I've seen a lot lately that I think are super witchy. So first, in 1995, God, I hate that that's vintage, but it totally is. In 1995, Mattel released two matching Barbies. It was like a little set, designed by Bob Mackie, very famous fashion designer, truly one of the greats. Even I, who am a fashion disaster, I know who Bob Mackie is because he designed Marilyn Monroe's, you know, Happy Birthday, Mr. President dress that Kim Kardashian just recently ruined, and was responsible for like all of Cher's most iconic and hot looks from the 70s. If Cher looked fabulous on the Sonny and Cher show, like their variety show, you can bet that Bob Mackie was behind it. He also, you know, he styled like Lucille Ball and Diana Ross, and he was so good. And his designs were very fun. They had a lot of flair. They were still very stylish, but they called attention to you, you know? They were wonderful. So in 1995, they had him design these two matching dolls, and they're called the Moon Goddess and the Sun Goddess. The Moon Goddess is wearing, you know, sequined blue and black and silver with a big silver crescent moon accessory. And the Sun Goddess is decked out in yellow and gold and has these fiery sun rays coming out from behind her. Just beautiful, absolutely beautiful dolls. And if you can find the dolls with their original box or the set that they came in, they even came with a small, like a printout of Bob Mackie's original fashion drawing of these dolls. So those would look really cool on your altar. In 2000, Mattel released a Celestial collection, which is not quite as exquisite, but still really nice. There's three dolls. There's Midnight Moon, Morning Star, and Evening Star. They're lovely. Again, I hate that these are vintage. It's more than 20 years ago. But these are not so vintage that they're thousands of dollars. And I have seen lots of people in my groups finding these dolls at thrift stores as well. The Midnight Moon is really, really cool. She's got a beautiful chain. She's got this silvery white gown. Very lovely. And these could certainly stand in for goddesses, or they could represent the luminaries, the sun, the moon, the stars themselves. Between 2008 and 2010, Mattel released Greek goddesses. They made Aphrodite and Athena and also Medusa, who's not technically a goddess, but I'm okay with it. Super cool, beautiful. They're all Barbies. They also designed Artemis, and she would have come with a tiny little fawn, but they never ended up producing her, which made me really sad. So, you know, if you work with Greek goddesses like Aphrodite, Athena, or Medusa, you can get those and put those on your altar. Between 2011 and 2013, Mattel put out these very futuristic, kind of sci-fi-esque space goddess dolls. With the goddess of the galaxy, empress of aliens, and the queen of the constellations. Very cool. There are Barbies of the World dolls that are dressed in the traditional clothing of different cultures that you can turn into a representation of a deity from that culture. There are mermaid dolls that can be used as a water goddess. There are, you know, there's all sorts of really interesting designs. There's a faraway forest elf Barbie that you could use as a Celtic goddess. There's dolls with butterfly wings and butterfly accessories that can be Psyche. You know, there's you could just paint a Ken doll gold and he could be Eros. And then now you have the divine lovers. there's just a lot you can do if you're specifically a fan of Barbie, if you're a collector and you want to bring the energy, the emotional energy of the dolls or of Barbie specifically into your magical space. And that doesn't even get into cool stuff like Monster High dolls, which are just asking to be used for magic. In fact, a lot of the doll customizations that you find online, like the of Crafts and Curios, which a lot of them use dolls that are more Monster High style because they have more opposable limbs and a larger face, so they can, you know, do a little bit more with it and stuff it with a little bit more stuff. There you go. You can absolutely use your plastic fashion dolls as a puppet, just like you would one that you sew up yourself. Something that I want you all to take away from today's episode is that Barbie isn't just a doll. Barbie is an idea. Barbie can be whomever and whatever you need her to be. Barbie doesn't even have to be a girl, since Barbie has to be a girl, right? That's your doll. You are the creator, and the doll is your creation. You can find dolls that aren't made to wear high heels. You can find all different styles of clothes. The hair can be cut. The makeup can be removed with nail polish remover or acetone, by the way, very simple. Or can be put on with paint and with markers. The truth is that a Barbie girl is really just someone who doesn't want to be defined by what men think they are, by their biology, by someone else's idea about their sexuality or their body or their career or their purpose in life. Barbie encourages people to try on different ways of being and different ways of interacting with the world and to create the identity and the life that is most empowering for them. That could be pink and posh, but it doesn't have to be. That's what's special about Barbie. That's what makes Barbie magical. Before I end today's episode, I want to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who listened and commented and emailed after my previous episode, after number 100. That was a pretty difficult thing to record and to share. And the incredibly compassionate response from so many of you has really made me feel supported in a way that I haven't felt in quite some time. I was really, really nervous about coming back to the show. I did not know what to expect or if I had anyone to come back to. So it means a lot to me that so many of you tuned in. It means a lot, like how much it means to me cannot be overstated. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about some of the new episodes I'm working on, the books that I'm reading for reviews. I'm getting very, very excited for Halloween. You know, it's August, which apparently means it's Halloween season. The Spirit Halloween, one of the first Spirit Halloweens in Windsor, just opened on Friday the 4th of August. And it was such a big deal that the newspaper covered it. So I am very excited for Halloween and for the future of the show. So, you know, follow and subscribe and keep an eye out. Follow the Fat Feminist Witch wherever you prefer to listen so that you know when it's time to come back and to do some ranting, raving, and wand waving with me. If you want email updates about new episodes, about books that I'm writing, and blog posts, you can go to my website, thefatfeministwitch.ca, and click the follow button. In between shows, I expand on some of the topics I discuss. For example, I just put out a post all about the magic of working with the color pink, especially bright magenta shades, like the one most associated with Barbie. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. The Fat Feminist Witch podcast would not be possible without the generosity of those who support me via Patreon, and I am eternally grateful. If you would like to support the show this way, you can do that by going to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch, where you will find show notes for every episode, hot tips about future topics so that you know about them in advance, a special lunar newsletter, which I just started putting out, and some other fun exclusive content that you can only find there. For Fat Feminist Witch mugs, t-shirts, journals, stickers, and a whole lot more, you can visit my Tee Public shop. And right now, from August 11th to 13th, you can get up to 35% off everything in the store. So check it out at the link in the description for this episode. Tee Public t-shirts do go up to size 5X. Limited range of colors and styles, but they are expanding it all of the time, which is why I use them to put out some of my merchandise. So check that out. And thank you all again for listening to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, episode 101. Before I end today's episode, I want to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who listened and commented and emailed after my previous episode, after number 100. That was a pretty difficult thing to record and to share. And the incredibly compassionate response from so many of you has really made me feel supported in a way that I haven't felt in quite some time. I was really, really nervous about coming back to the show. I did not know what to expect or if I had anyone to come back to. So it means a lot to me that so many of you tuned in. It means a lot. how much it means to me cannot be overstated. So I'm really excited. I'm really excited about some of the new episodes I'm working on, the books that I'm reading for reviews. I'm getting very, very excited for Halloween. You know, it's August, which apparently means it's Halloween season. The Spirit Halloween, one of the first Spirit Halloweens in Windsor, just opened. On Friday the 4th of August, and it was such a big deal that the newspaper covered it. So I am very excited for Halloween and for the future of the show. So, you know, follow and subscribe and keep an eye out. Follow the Fat Feminist Witch wherever you prefer to listen so that you know when it's time to come back and to do some ranting, raving, and wand waving with me. If you want email updates about new episodes, about books that I'm writing, and blog posts, you can go to my website, thefatfeministwitch.ca, and click the follow button. In between shows, I expand on some of the topics I discuss. For example, I just put out a post all about the magic of working with the color pink, especially bright magenta shades like the one most associated with Barbie. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. The Fat Feminist Witch Podcast would not be possible without the generosity of those who support me via Patreon, and I am eternally grateful. If you would like to support the show this way, you can do that by going to patreon.com/thefatfeministwitch, where you will find show notes for every episode, hot tips about future topics so that you know about them in advance, a special lunar newsletter, which I just started putting out, and some other fun exclusive content that you can only find there. For Fat Feminist Witch mugs, t-shirts, journals, stickers, and a whole lot more, you can visit my Tee Public shop. And right now, from August 11th to 13th, you can get up to 35% off everything in the store. So check it out at the link in the description for this episode. Tee Public t-shirts do go up to size 5X. Limited range of colors and styles, but they are expanding it all of the time, which is why I use them to put out some of my merchandise. So check that out. And thank you all again for listening to the Fat Feminist Witch Podcast, episode 101.